everyone. My name is Ashita Cabra, and I'm the founder and CEO of Buyrotation, the world's first social fashion rental app. I created the platform so that we can transform our fashion consumption for good. You can save money, make money, wear new clothes, make new friends, and save the planet one rental at a time. This is our brand podcast, On Rotation, where I'm joined by inspiring members from our community.
I'm so proud to say that this podcast is brought to you by NatWest Business Banking. Circularity and sustainability are topics that are very close to my heart, and that's why I founded Buyrotation. If you're interested in finding out how NatWest could help make your business more sustainable, try out the NatWest Carbon Planner tool. It's free to use, and you don't even have to be a customer. Answer some questions about your business and you'll receive an actionable report to help your business work towards its sustainable future. Search NatWest Carbon Planner to get started. With NatWest, tomorrow begins today. The Carbon Planner tool is eligible to businesses in the UK.
Today, I'm joined on the series by Brett and Scott Staniland, identical twin brothers, as you can see, models and sustainability advocates. Brett rose to fame when starring on Love Island, where he was the first contestant to refuse being dressed by the show's, at the time, fast fashion sponsor. Both brothers use their platforms to educate others on sustainability and frequently consult brands in the fashion and automotive industries. They frequently also contribute to publications, speak on panels, and take part in environmental rallies. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
So, guys, I have never had two people on the show at once. This is going to be, I think, kind of fun. Let's see how it goes.
We'll have one person split into two, so that's kind of cheating a little bit. It should be easier.
Or you're basically the same person, exactly, right? Yeah. How do you tell the twins apart?
It's funny because like our friends back home, we've got some that can tell us apart. If we were to answer each other's phone, they would go like, why have you picked up Brett's phone? But then people like my mum would be like guessing all the time. But we're also mirror twins, so like Brett's right-footed and left-handed. I'm left-footed and right-handed.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, so like our hair naturally goes alternate ways. And we've got some symmetrical freckles on our body as well. People are really amazed by this. Yeah.
This is an actual scientific thing?
It's a thing, like a really small percentage of identical twins are also mirror twins.
That's so cool.
Just so rare.
So do you guys liken yourselves to like the American Ashley Olsons?
Oh my God, I wish.
Yeah, actually, you know, now I'm a little bit older, I would actually love to be them.
Yeah.
And
you
have their wardrobe.
Start like the men's the row.
Yeah.
They were cool even when we were younger.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much cooler than we were when we were younger.
For sure.
Okay, I love to ask this question to begin the series. What's currently on your rotation?
Okay, very randomly, I've started watching Two and a Half Men. Again, I think Charlie Harper is a fashion icon. Don't take all of his lifestyle on board, but his clothing was pretty good. And books, I've got really into reading again since I finished my PhD. Being able to read for pleasure, and anthologies and fashion books is what I'm like really doubling down on at the minute.
Tell me a little bit more about these anthologies. I love short stories too.
I really enjoyed Charlie Porter's What Artists Wear, where he gets like loads of really interesting people and gets their approach to getting dressed and what uniform is to them and self-expression. That's been really interesting. But also like anthologies where you just hear a bunch of different voices all in one book. I find it's really engaging, and it's really easy to read things like that because it's constantly changing like a dynamic storyline. So it's good.
And you're doing this even when you're not on holiday. That's amazing.
I don't go on holiday. It's freedom.
You're constantly working.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
On rotation for me, I weirdly, like my background noise thing is the NPR Tiny Desks. So just like constantly playing the reruns of the Tiny Desks. And then I've gone down the rabbit hole again of looking into the super fast fashion brands that have branched into physical space. Mm. And I find that concept so interesting because you've got like, the consumer on one side is like, oh, it's great, I can finally go and touch and feel the clothes. And then on the other side is a lot of Gen Z going, this is horrible, what is happening to the world? So I've been like diving headfirst into those conversations really, and getting a lot of it shouted back at me too online.
Have you gone and checked out one of these physical spaces
No,
yet?
But I really want to go and do it, but also to interview the people that are in the queues and stuff, just to see like...
Mystery shopper.
But who the demographic actually is, you know, we always... Like, there's so much conjecture online of like, oh, this person can't afford any more fashion, they have to shop there. But how many people have we seen gone into the queues and said, like, what's your income? Like, where are you growing up? And all of that sort of stuff to get, like, into the nitty-gritty also, of like, who shops there.
How much do you plan on spending today?
Exactly, yeah, yeah. It's not just, I can only shop here because I have a tenner. It's, I'm going to spend 100 quid on 15 things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I would love to see some sort of content around this from you guys.
But I'm worried people might also jump on me a little bit. Maybe swing for me or get escorted out.
But you can do it in a positive way, which is what you just did.
Yeah, like an empowering way. Friendly. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, to be like...
Just don't be yourself.
Yeah, just go against everything that's in my head. Just go against that.
Yeah, basically don't tell them off. Yeah. And they'll be happy to star in your new series, yeah, exactly. Why We Hate Fast Fashion.
Yeah.
So guys, why do you hate fast fashion?
It's such a like loaded, open-ended question. Why do I hate fast fashion? I think it exploits people and it exploits the planet. And basically doesn't take responsibility for anything at all. It's everything that shouldn't be in fashion.
It's funny because like we also get people ask us or like call us hypocrites for loving fashion weeks but hating fast fashion and like calling ourselves environmentalists. But if you were to ask me why I hated fast fashion like 6 years ago, it would be to do with like the amount of water that was going into denim jeans and the amount we weren't wearing our closets and stuff like that. I think there was a stat that said we wear 20% of our wardrobe 80% of the time. And so that's why I kind of hated fast fashion, because of the churn. And now we're like so far deeper down that rabbit hole. It's more the planet needs saving. It's just completely being obliterated by the fashion monster that seemed to have grown exponentially since Zara, H&M and the brands that were high street brands became super fast fashion brands too.
I mean, does being a model have, you know, a big part to play in this?
Yeah, I think when we started modelling and, you know, you go on set and you're in studios and on campaigns and you actually, it was the first time we actually got to see the vast amount of clothing that exists. And I remember being stood in like studios and like just a rail of clothing that only I was wearing that day of like 75 looks. And then I'd be doing that again the next day and the next day. And then you realise that there's seven other models all shooting at the same time. You're like, this is crazy amounts of clothing. And they shoot this just continuously throughout the year. It's not like, right, we're shooting our collection for this season and then we have 4 or 5 months off and then shoot the next collection. It's every single day they're shooting stuff. So that was definitely the first time that I saw the physical manifestation of like fast fashion.
And then, you put each of those 70 styles on your body and you were like, this doesn't taste great. Well, this doesn't feel great.
Yeah, but that's also the next step. So like you see it and then the next response is getting the tactile nature of clothing. You feel the fabrics and you feel them against your skin and you start to learn like, you know, the natural fibers feel nicer against your skin compared to synthetic ones and they're less likely to have like all the seams just tatty and loose. And yeah, you know, it's just an educational process from there. That's how you and I got kind of obsessed with like textiles and fabrics. But I think it kind of touched a nerve for us with our upbringing as well. Like the way we learned to look after things and like fix them when they break and only buy things that you knew we were going to get lots of use out of. That nerve was triggered when we started to learn about fast fashion too.
Yeah, that was the same for me at university. I think I was not only skint, but sick of having to buy from high street fast fashion brands and it falling apart really quickly.
It didn't used to be this way.
It didn't. I think it was our generation that it started falling apart.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think the generation before ours or a couple before ours could buy something from Zara that was 100% wool and they've still got it. And I think that generation is now looking at us thinking, how are you not making your clothes last? But they don't realise that they're being made poorly purposely.
Yeah.
To make them not last as well.
Remember, if you look at like Top Man, Top Shop in like 2008, 2007, it actually wasn't bad. Like, and it wasn't cheap. That's the other misconception.
This is what I remember.
It wasn't cheap. I remember wanting a suit for my prom and having like £130. That would get you a Top Man suit. And it was a lot of money in 2008 or 9.
Well, in Singapore, where I grew up, you know, going to Top Shop and shopping there was like a sign of, oh, like my parents are really like spoiling me. You know, it's like a big birthday treat. But then if you came here like 10 years later, it was like fast fashion shopping.
We call it 2 week Top Man.
Yeah. But then we realized, I think going from like year 11 for us at the end of secondary school into sixth form, that is when I started to notice trends coming around a lot quicker. Like 1 week it was, bear with us, carrot fit jeans and cargos. The next week it's skinny ripped jeans.
Yeah.
Then after that it was like Turn Up and G-Star 96 jeans. And like I started to notice 1 week Fred Perry polos were cool. The next it was Lyle and Scott. And then I was like, right, it's getting a little bit quick for my purse now. I couldn't actually afford to keep up with all these trends. And then from that it just like snowballed.
So now I want to ask you about Love Island in particular. You went into the show knowing that there were fast fashion sponsors.
Yeah.
How did you feel about, how did you marry this up with yourself when you were entering and you're like, I am actually going on the show?
So it was one of the big deal breakers of me doing the show or not. I remember I knew obviously the sponsor was going to be a fast fashion giant, and we waited, because it was kind of like a collective decision between myself and Scott, my best friend Richard, my mate James, and was like, right, we get the contestant agreement and we could see what relationship the show has with the fast fashion sponsor, and that would kind of predicate whether I would do the show or not. So one option was I do the show, and if I have to, I'm obliged to because I've signed the contract, have to wear their stuff, I wear the bare minimum. I take as many clothes as I want from my own wardrobe.
That's during the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I try and spin it in a way to be like, you know, I took their money and I'm trying to put it all to good now by raising awareness. Or the other option, which is actually what happened, is that the loophole in the contract was if you don't accept any of the clothing, they can't use your image to in their like marketing or ad campaign. So I said to Scott and Rich and the other guys, I was like, look, we can do it. And I'll just take all my own wardrobe. I'll pack really, you know, as much clothes as I can. And I'll just wear all my own clothes. And every time someone offers me something, I'll just say no. Because people don't realize that if you wear literally, there was a hat sponsor even, and I couldn't even take a single baseball cap, nothing, because there was a hat sponsor. But people don't realize if you wear any of their stuff, they can essentially screenshot the TV and use your image, name, and voice for a full year after you leave the villa in their e-commerce, their websites, their email marketing, like everything.
Even like a bikini top worth like £5 that they're selling anywhere on their website.
Anything. So if you wear it, you wear it in the villa, your image is theirs to use. So that was our workaround. It was like, right, we'll just take all my own clothing. Luckily, the producers allowed me to do that and they were okay. They were on board. And yeah, it was somewhat successful. I managed to wear some really small London brands. I did take some clothing that was taken off me because you basically pack your suitcase and just before you go into the villa, they unpack it and repack it for you. And I lost two Catherine Hamlet t-shirts that were designed by Patrick McDowell that were like Brexit t-shirts.
Oh, right.
But like subliminally messaging Brexit. One said help in capital letters and the other one, less subtle, said fashion hates Brexit. Mm. And they didn't let me wear them in the villa, but you know, I still snuck some other things through.
It was interesting also seeing your wardrobe on rotation for the other islanders as well, because they obviously get the pick of what gets delivered every day or so.
New
in the
clothes every episode.
But they wanted to wear his cropped white denim Catherine Hamlet jacket that was Patrick McDowell designed instead of the fast fashion stuff.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like there's like a delivery every 4 days and it's literally like a duffel bag the size of a table full of clothing, like everything, shoes, sandals, swimwear, underwear, and then obviously evening outfits. And it would just arrive. Like you don't ask for, you can say, oh, you know, in my next drop, can you give me this, that? But it just arrives. So every few days they'd be like, Brett, come to the front door. You've got your bag. And I'd be like,
oh, a separate bag for you.
Yeah, so everyone gets an individual one. Yeah. And I'd be like, guys, if you want anything out of my bed, just help yourself because I don't want anything. But it comes without you like wanting
it. And you were washing your own clothes and rewearing it. Because were they even washing these fast fashion clothes?
I don't think so. No.
Yeah.
No. There's like,
it's so crazy.
They've got a new villa since my season. But at the end of our bedroom, there's a mirror in the aircon unit, just a row of beds, and just out of shot is literally like a mountain of clothing that no one can see. And it just gets cleared out every single day and chucked in the bin. And it accumulates every single day. It's massive.
And you were just using the washing machine?
Yeah, no, you have like a little laundry bag and they take it away and bring it back.
Okay, and they do it for you.
But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was nice. Like I took a linen shirt from Riley Studio, who unfortunately aren't a business anymore, but they were really good. And I wore their puffer coat for the protest too.
Some King and Tuckfield stuff.
Yeah, some King and Tuckfield stuff as well from London.
Do you think that you inspired quite a few of the Love Islanders and even really the show producers to think more about partnering with the fast fashion sponsor?
I'd like to think so. I think I'll let other people say whether that's true or not. But I think definitely I've seen it now. We're two seasons after mine. I think it just takes one person to say you can still do this in a more responsible way or a different way that maybe people might have wanted to before but not seen as an option. It just takes one person to do it and then more of it will follow. And I've particularly seen it with kind of like more self-expressive experimental style. I went on, I painted my nails, I wore pearls, you know, I wore things that might typically be in women's wear. And at the time I got obliterated on Twitter. I remember you sitting at home saying, mate, like you should see Twitter. And now like painted
every
nails.
Contestant's got pearls on.
Everyone's got pearls on. Like, people are like,
you definitely inspired them.
Maybe that's, like I say, like, maybe it just takes one person to do it and then people are more comfortable doing it too.
Not to be a fan of, but like, I don't think the sponsor would have changed without you doing the protest, especially with it so closely linked to Love Islanders.
Mm.
I think the people that organize it, the people that attend it, obviously the creative director at the time, I think without someone from the same environment going against that so strongly, change doesn't happen. So I think eBay were very clever to jump on this and go, do you know what, we've got a massive opportunity for people to lean into their individuality, but also give people a more responsible way to consume clothes. For me, it's been really, really funny watching people go from, I really want to be the new Boohoo ambassador, I really want to be the Pretty Little Thing ambassador, to, Brett, how'd you get into a runway show? How'd you go to London Fashion Week? Are you doing Paris Fashion Week?
Oh, you mean the other Love Islanders are asking
you? And now we're seeing Islanders want to be, they've seen Fashion Week is cool, not fast fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really interesting.
And I'd love to know, because you seem like a really, really supportive brother. How was it like for you while he was on the island?
Did you not see my Instagram account while I was away?
Yeah, the content creation was phenomenal. Just getting a chance, like a clean swing at your brother is always fun. So creating content that was down that alley, but also because of the amount of abuse, I had some friends helping me, and I was like, look, if we don't jump on the jokes, then you just become the joke.
Mm.
So let's take the piss out of Brett, like everyone else is, and be in on the joke rather
than
be offended.
You'd agreed already.
Yeah, so I'd given all my passwords to Scott, and I was like, look, anything that comes out, just jump on it, laugh together rather than like get defensive,
because you can control the narrative that
exactly
way.
And it's fun, like, people jump on it with you. But the one thing, like, I like to think I've got my head screwed on, I still was completely overwhelmed by the amount of abuse. Like, it was completely relentless. You close one app and open another. People also use it to check up on you. So, like, I had, like, my auntie would say, oh, did you see this about Brett? I hope you're okay. I was like, just say, hope you're okay. Don't send me the article where someone's being horrible about him. And then I was messaging, like, people running the other Islanders' accounts as well, like, seeing how they were and just, like, communicating. And they were like, oh, you know, if it gets too much, just like lock your phone, leave it at home, go for a walk. I was like, I can't do that because people think I'm Brett.
Yes.
And so I'm now like arguing with people in the street that want a photo with Brett that I'm saying I'm not Brett. And they're going, don't be a knobhead, I know you're Brett. Just have a photo with me. I was like, I'll have a photo with you,
oh,
but
you're
I'm
off
not
the
Brett.
Island, so you didn't do it.
Like, he's clearly in Mallorca still,
yeah,
but I'll have a photo with you. So that sort of stuff was, it was crazy. And the amount of access people have to your life is really insane at times.
I mean, they must have started, like, you know, going and speaking to your school teachers and people who are in university
with you.
They were
trying to get my nan to go on the radio at one point, which I was just like, if my nan goes anywhere near a microphone, I don't know what she's going to say.
There was loads of people, even people are so, like, relentless with, like, digging things up. There were people trying to find out what my PhD was in and the title and go through, like, all my academic career and all that stuff. Going on company's house and trying to work out what your address is. Like, it's so intense, so, so intense. And unfortunately for Scott, he doesn't have the privilege of anonymity like the other handlers did, unfortunately, because we're twins, so.
Yeah, identical twins, that too.
Handler makes you sound like a dog. We'll take it.
And tell me a little bit about how you guys are different, because I see there's a lot of love here. Do you guys compete with each other?
People are really surprised by, like, what we were like growing up, because we were heavily into sport, super competitive, but, like, any maths quiz was a competition. Height was a competition.
Who's
was
taller?
Like, Brett's an inch taller now, but I was always
better in maths as well.
Yeah. So, like, we would literally pick anything and be competitive at it.
It's put us in good stead in our, like, you know, careers and adulthood. But when we were little, it was like win or cry.
Yeah.
It was that. And
but
like,
also,
I remember,
so competitive that if I'm first and Brett wasn't second, I would be fuming.
Yeah.
Oh, so you would
absolutely
want him to be up there with you.
There's no way someone else can get between us.
But that's sweet, though.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you
look at... causes a lot of fights, though.
What, with someone else?
No,
in the middle?
Between
each other.
Yeah.
No. Because with Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, if you remember, one of them, I think, dyed her hair really dark, and she wanted to be the exact... I think Mary-Kate wanted to be very different from Ashley, and, you know...
I think all twins go through that, though. Because, like, growing up, we wanted to look completely different.
Did you guys
being known as the twins.
Yeah.
We wanted to be Brett and Scott, individual.
Yeah.
Brett cut a fringe in and put a black stretcher earring in and wanted to be Preston out the ordinary boys. And I was just like, wanted to be the football jock guy.
Mm. But I guess you get closer with age, it sounds like. And a few sort of big moments, like The Island being one of those.
Yeah, even like going to university, like Scott and I like both studied the same thing. We lived together.
Same uni?
Yep.
Really?
Everything the same. Oh my God.
No, you guys love each other throughout.
We kind of have to. We would never say we don't like each other, but we like have to love each other, you know? But yeah, it's just, yeah, the competitiveness, like, is still there. It's still there. Even if we go for a kickabout now or go and play tennis together, it's win or cry. Simple as that.
But it's also like, I don't think people realise how convenient it is being a twin.
Mm.
Like, everyone always says, oh, you can share a driving licence or share an insurance and stuff. But not just that, it's just like, you know, when you want to go out to play, you don't need to call anyone.
That's hilarious.
You just can go. Yeah. And
do you guys share clothes?
Yeah.
All the time. Steal is probably a better word.
Sure.
But yeah, we have like one wardrobe, let's say. But
that's
there are
amazing.
Things in there that you do not touch as well. There's like absolutely
some grail
not,
pieces.
Yeah. There's like a traffic light system.
What if either of you looks better in either's clothes?
Do you know, the worst bit is when one of us isn't there and wears it to an event and then you see the event picture.
And tell you're like, I wanted to wear that.
In the WhatsApp chat straight away. Like, how dare you?
Did you do that, Brett?
I can't remember.
Such a brat.
I don't know if there's certain, obviously we share all of our clothes, but there is definitely a time if we're both getting ready for an event and one of us is like outdone the other, we'd be like, I've got to go get changed now. Like, you can't wear that and me this. Like, we're not on the same level, so we'll have to like change.
Okay, that's sure really both. Cute. That's actually fun. And tell me a little bit about some of these Love Island friends that you have as well, right? Who are trying to transition out of fast fashion and get more into, I guess, high fashion or like sustainability.
It's been interesting. In the last 18 months, it's really been noticeable. Like, you've got people like dying for the big fast fashion deal, and now they're dying to go to runway shows in Paris, which is crazy. It's testament of the way the industry's changed too and gone extremely digital with TikTok, because they all got big TikTok audiences too. But I think they see that it's much more self-expressive. It's kind of, I don't know if they're trying to be, I don't actually think it's in a pretentious way or a bougie way. I think they just think it's cooler than fast fashion. For me, it's the higher end luxury end of the industry is more about storytelling. And it's what it relies on. It's what it's relied on. That's the reason it's hundreds of years old. And these brands have existed for hundreds of years because they've told great stories for so long. So I think this is where many of them may struggle, because as a model, you're part of someone's storytelling.
Mm.
And so I've managed to learn that over the last few years of being in the industry, work with great creative directors and art directors. And that's basically what they want on social media now. They want someone who's a storyteller and an advocate for the brand to convey that message to a bigger audience. Now, can that be done on an iPhone or on TikTok and this and that? Perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be interesting. It's definitely going to be interesting in the next few more seasons of Fashion Week, because the audience now at Fashion Week is completely different to how it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I think there's just thinking about your following, and it's probably a bit mixed, right? There's like high fashion, and then there's people who are a bit more aspirational.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about how you guys, create content that speaks to all of these different...
I say this all the time. I'll post something from like Miss Oni, which I brand really close to my heart. I know all the family. And there's always people in there like, yeah, well, some of us aren't rich.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, we can't all do this. I'm like, that's fine. It might not be for you, but the storytelling element of where the fabric comes from might be interesting for you the next time you do go and buy something and look for something that's 100% cotton, for example, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, when I'm posting things about how to like get the most out of your wardrobe or... buy things that are really long lasting or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some of my audience that it just doesn't resonate with, and that's completely fine. You're never going to tell a message that's great for all your audience.
Yeah. But this is, by the way, what I love about you guys as well. The fact that, you know, you have so many interesting angles to this story about, you know, sustainability. And, you know, it's not just because you don't want fast fashion, but it's also because the fabrics and the quality and, you know, kind of making things last. And you've seen it from, you know, the fashion industry was a model yourself, the storytelling side of things.
It's that big spectrum of sustainability. Yeah. And we talk about it all the time. It's not buying something perfect that's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many more things like rental or learning how to fix and mend your clothes, or like, you know, our friend at Save Your Wardrobe, like platforms like that, they're also great. That's also in the conversation too, that people might not necessarily be aware of.
Yeah. I think if you'd have asked me like 5 years ago about that, I was all for shaming people into like, you can't do this, you shouldn't do that, that's bad. And it just didn't work. You just turn people away because it's not engaging, it's not digestible. It doesn't leave them in a frame where they want to go and learn and get better. And so we've started offering this sustainability spectrum of pick which bits fit in your life, the things that work for you, and just go really hard for those. And so again, 5 years ago, if you'd have said, you know, a Love Islander is a sustainability advocate or a sustainability ambassador, I'd have gone like, absolutely not. You need like, there's people been working on this for years, and like the Arjo Barbers,
yes,
and
of course,
all of those guys that have really done the work. But again, if you've only got the converted people in the room, you're only going to get what you've always got. And so now I'm very much of the frame where, you know, like Tasha, from who's the eBay ambassador from Love Island, I'm like, I'm all for her wanting to dive straight into it. And I find that so, so much more empowering.
What's
to a community.
Her last name?
Tasha Gowrie.
Oh, she uses BioRotation.
Yeah,
and she doesn't even tell us.
She's she's awesome.
Friend
she's
stuff.
Cool.
But I didn't know she was on Love Island.
Yeah, so she was with Andrew and known for her individuality and her style. And so I think that storytelling works really well with eBay, where you've got so many things you can search for. And same with BioRotation as well. Like, there's so much different aspects of it that you can dip into.
No, but I love that, because I think that's really important, that you have to approach it as, you know, kind of in a positive way,
yeah,
so that people feel like, yeah, they don't feel like they have to change all their habits, throw away all their fast fashion clothes, because that's not sustainable either.
Yeah,
right?
This same with like veganism, but like this perfectionism which is demanded from environmentalists, like, oh my God, you took a flight to Paris?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, shit, yeah. Like, it's the only option I could afford.
Yes.
Like, my latest content that I posted last week about the super fast fashion brand, people in the comments saying, yeah, but you uploaded this on an iPhone, didn't you? And it's just like,
it's like, okay, this constant perfectionism that's demanded from people who speak about the environment. No one's perfect and no product is perfect.
Yeah, I think we should encourage people, even if it's baby steps, even if they're still shopping on Zara or ASOS or whatever, and then, you know, they're kind of swapping maybe that one purchase that week by repairing an existing outfit or renting on BioRotation, of course.
That's it. Just look after the clothes you've already got.
Yeah.
Like, don't, if you want to go into sustainable fashion or want to get involved, don't feel like you have to throw all of your stuff away and start from scratch, because that is not sustainable in any way. Just look after your clothes.
But how does this relate to like other models that you work with and walk with? You know, the fact that you're talking so much about sustainability, but for them, they might not really care. They just love how amazing the fashion industry is. I'm finally part of Missoni's like catwalk or something like that.
It's tricky. It's definitely changed over the years. I think there's...
Because models are kind of seen as...
disposable.
Yeah, and also like, I guess the stereotype is that they're airheaded.
Yeah, true. I mean, that's been the stigma for years about models, and yet some of them are the most creative and interesting people I've ever met. Many of them are really well educated, and you just don't get to see that, because you don't see them talk.
But that's because I was told that they were discouraged from showing their personality at all. They were meant to be a blank canvas.
Exactly. So you're supposed to be like moldable
into
whatever the designer wants you to be. So yeah, historically it's been, you know, don't show too much of your personality. Let them imprint onto you what they want or what they see. It was easy for me to say, well, I don't want to be the 6'1", dark hair, blue eye guy. I want to be Brett. And if they want Brett, they ask for Brett and they get Brett.
Mm-hmm.
Not like just any of the other guys that look like
him. If he's not available, they get Scott.
Yeah. If you can't afford me, you get Scott. But I think it's definitely changed now, and there's more and more models speaking up about environmentalist causes. But there's also like amazingly creative painters and artists and musicians that come from the fashion industry. It's weird for me to tell people that loads and loads and loads of models, probably more so than aren't, don't actually care about fashion. They're not really interested in it.
Interesting.
It doesn't interest them. They just go
to
work.
Pay for bills?
They just go to work and go home at the end of the day. And it's weird telling people that, especially when some models are really, really successful, but there's plenty of bankers who are super successful who don't care.
Mm-mm.
And they go home at 5 o'clock and they switch off.
Yeah.
And like any other industry. But yeah, it's the same. It's the same for the fashion industry too.
So interesting learning all this about the modeling world, because it does seem like it's evolved since, you know, since when we were young, where it was very much all about the looks and not about the personality. Then obviously you had these famous models like Cara Delevingne, who were known for their personality and their eyebrows. Right.
Yep.
But I'm curious to know, do you actually look into the designer that you're walking the runway shows of, and then you make a decision? Because like obviously you did Patrick McDowell, who is completely and all for sustainable fashion.
Yeah, I think any job, literally any job.
Yeah.
There's an extent where I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, I have a management, I have an agency, and, you know, we can make a decision together. Literally any job I get now, I weigh up whether it's aligned with me. I wouldn't go and walk for Dolce & Gabbana or Alexander Wang. I just simply would. They're strict no's now. But yeah, like, Patrick's one of my favourites. I will always walk for him. I really enjoy it, and I would do it for free. Because I care about his brand and I care about the stories that he tells.
I love seeing you walk, and that red dress, the finale was
amazing,
incredible. And what about you, Scott? Do you guys come as a pair for runway shows? Because I don't think a designer would want that.
Yeah,
right?
we've done some runways together.
Yeah.
But I kind of, because I'm a bit older now as well, I kind of prefer consuming it. I would rather sit and watch a runway show than be on the runway.
Okay, so Brad, you're the one who walks then.
You prefer walking still, don't you? And I'm like, I'm kind of done. I had that part in my life like a few years ago, and it wasn't enjoyable because I didn't have much of a say what was going on. Mm. But then the last few runways, I've walked for Patrick as well, and Helen Anthony, and some other designers that I really like what they do. Whereas when you're just a model and model is your only lane, you don't get a choice. And so I kind of didn't want that. And I think the balance that Brett has now is probably perfect for what we do and what we stand up for.
So you guys have been involved in some pretty big protests. Like, I think it's your pinned photo, isn't it, on your Instagram? Yeah. I don't think I've ever been in a protest, but that's also because I'm from Singapore and we were told not to do anything.
Don't take to the streets.
Exactly, not to do anything that rocks the boat. But I'd love to know, why should anyone go and protest?
I think we all have a right to protest. We have a right to challenge systems. And I think a protest is something that's really unique. It's something that it's been like a main form of activism for hundreds of years. It's how we challenge people in power. And I think there's something particularly moving about seeing a group of people who have that team cohesion and task cohesion, and, you know, you've all got something in common, and it brings you together to the point where you literally walk down the streets making as much noise as possible. It's disruptive, but I think doing it in the right way can be really, really impactful and powerful.
I think one thing that is kind of missed a lot of the time is the sustainable fashion community, or like what we do for work online, can get quite lonely and overwhelming, and you think that you're like speaking to a brick wall a lot of the time, and you wonder how many people are listening and taking it on board. And I think when you do a protest, you realize that there's a group of you that stand for the same things, and you're not alone, and all of those things that come with like the camaraderie of it. And what Brett said, it's disruptive enough to be empowering, but also digestible enough for people to want to get involved. All you have to do is show up. You don't have to write a caption. You don't have to go and take photography. You don't have to go and produce anything. All you got to do is show up, and you being there is the power of it.
Yeah.
I think that's really engaging for people.
Yeah. There's that thing, you know, like, how are you showing up for people? For me, it's, there's many things. There's people who don't have a voice and don't have a platform that are always exploited in the industry and neglected. And I think me doing, it feels like the bare minimum at times, where I'm literally just walking down the street with a sign and I'm telling people, but you're giving people a voice who don't have one, and you're spreading it to people who don't hear it.
So you would highly encourage they attend the next one, basically.
Yep, definitely.
How should I prepare for it? How should someone prepare?
Comfy shoes.
Comfy shoes. No heels. Okay.
No heels. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, it depends. The one that we did outside of the PLT show, it was blowing a gale, freezing cold, raining, and was like in January. So puffer coat, gloves, very comfy shoes, and I had to be prepared for some confrontation.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to be brave. Just be brave. Yeah. Wear your heart in sleeve and be brave.
And maybe go with a friend or someone that you know. Definitely. If you're worried.
Yeah.
If you're
Bring
worried.
A friend, yeah.
Yeah.
Always, yeah.
Amazing. I do have some funny questions to end off, and then we do a quick fire. And I think this is super relevant for you guys because you're super chic and you're both models and you talk about sustainable fashion all the time. Okay. Be honest, what's a fashion faux pas that comes to mind?
I made.
Oh,
can we not do each other's?
You can do each other's.
Oh, okay.
You can make fun of your brother.
You're going to say socks and sandals that I wore.
No, I wasn't. Oh, that's such a good question.
Did you wear Crocs? Be honest.
No. They were Church's fisherman sandals.
Of course.
Yeah.
Like
Crocs. A gladiator sandal.
Jesus.
Spill the beans.
One that I've seen, not on any of us, but one I've seen regularly, is when men wear a belt and braces.
Yeah.
How kept up do these trousers need to be?
You're meant to, exactly, you're meant to use them to pull them up.
Well, they do the same job.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Why would you, yeah.
I don't know, the one I want to be a fashion faux pas now is people putting together an outfit or, you know, I've got this, so let's get dressed, da da da, and it's literally jeans, a t-shirt and a jacket. It's not an outfit, that's it's not a look.
Well, I think maybe the focus there is not on the outfit, it might be on the guy.
Yeah.
That's my guess, yeah.
Perhaps.
I think people would say tabby shoes a lot.
Oh, my tabbies.
What are tabby shoes?
The
Margiela's with the split toe
shoes.
Oh, the one that Maison... Margiela.
Yeah.
I like those.
The Margiela tabbies.
Yeah, I like them. They look
but
cool.
I think people always, like, that's the big one.
The whenever hooves,
I see
the cow hooves, yeah, the collar, yeah.
Whenever I see a video online about it, they're like, absolutely not.
They do look uncomfortable.
They're fantastic.
They're not. They're really comfy. Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is not a faux pas.
It's weirdly invasive having something, like, between your toes like that.
Yeah, it's like taking your toe virginity.
Yeah.
what faux pas have you committed?
I mean, I did have a guy scream at me outside Regent's Park because he was shouting at a cyclist, and my husband and I were telling him off for being mean to the cyclist. And then he looked at me and he's like, "Who the hell do you think you are, fashion police?"
Because
I was wearing my shrimp's like faux fur coat, which is green and black, leopard print, and like really like weird, lame, like not welly boots, but kind of. Some random boots without heel and my lounging trousers. I look like shit, okay,
but basically. But that's such a non-fashion person thing to say. Who are you, fashion police?
Yeah, like, what are you? Like,
if 75, grow up.
Yeah.
That was mean.
I don't know if I've committed any like serious fashion faux pas. I love rules.
Yeah.
So like when I learn them, I stick to them. I actually don't think I've ever worn double denim, and I don't think I've ever...
I think for Halloween that might suit you. You should
go as Justin Timberlake.
Justin Timberlake.
I'll be Britney.
JT.
I would say if we went back through some university photos, I think there'd be some good.
Oh god, I look so preppy. No, I feel like people would probably say socks and sandals though, won't they?
Yeah, definitely.
I still rock
Birkenstocks?
No, but I would do that. I have done before.
You did, yeah.
Before the fishermen's from churches, it was socks and Birks.
Let's go with that one.
That's a good one, yeah.
And for my final question. And we've talked about a lot of different topics today. But if you could be an expert in any other topic besides the ones you already are in, what would you be an expert in?
Interior design.
Nice.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that.
You guys are the same person.
I was going to say like Le Corbusier mid-century modernism or something like that.
Either might be
very retro
interior design or architecture or basketball.
Really?
If I could be world class at any sport, I think it'd be basketball. I just think it's cool.
I love that. Those are great answers. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. I've loved speaking to both of you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks.
For an exclusive £20 off on your next Buy Rotation rental, make sure to use the code ONROTATION. This code works for new and existing users for rentals over £30. Happy rotating!